The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled Power Play. Two of Atlanta's most powerful Black-owned startups, The Gathering Spot and Greenwood, join forces to become one. Mergers and acquisitions can be an efficient way for small businesses, especially Black-owned enterprises, to increase their market share and their ability to compete with larger organizations within the same industry. Combining the two institutions will expand their collective ability to increase community building, personal finance content, and banking services. Business pioneer and America's first Black billionaire, Reginald F. Lewis, often expressed that Black companies should combine forces for the greater good of Black communities. In his book, Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun? How Reginald Lewis Created a Billion-Dollar Business Empire, he expressed his desire to see more Black-led mergers and acquisitions as a business and wealth creation strategy. It's often hard to become something you haven't seen before, and we believe that this sets the tone for future mergers and acquisitions of Black-owned businesses, says Wilson. Along with the announcement of acquisition, it was shared that Wilson will hold the title of Chief Community Officer of Greenwood. Fellow co-founder T.K. Peterson, who is also Chief Operating Officer of the membership clubs, will serve as Vice President at the digital banking platform. In other words, the men who built this brand aren't going anywhere anytime soon. Also important to note and even admire is the tenacity of both Wilson and Peterson, who understand that acquisitions don't happen without grit and perseverance, especially for Black co-founders. Success is often the result of robust funding, access to strong social networks, company visibility, and most importantly, knowledge of and guidance through the M&A process. According to Crunchbase.com, Black founders are less likely to have access to the funding and resources they need to create a strong company, which can lead to an uneven playing field at all stages of their startups. As a result, it can be even more challenging for Black people to build businesses to levels deemed worthy of acquisition or an IPO, initial public offering, compared with white competitors. Wilson noted the two entities had been working on their deal since the beginning of 2022. Knowing we had shared values and goals, we decided it was an opportunity we couldn't miss, he explains. Ryan Glover, co-founder and chairman at Greenwood, offers pointed advice for Black companies considering M&A. Look for partnerships rooted in a shared mission and audience, he says. He adds, market volatility continues to impact companies across sizes and sectors. However, M&A can provide opportunities to accomplish more impact through combined efforts. This strategy was reflected in Greenwood's acquisition of The Gathering Spot, as the companies were aligned on our mission to support the economic growth of Black and Brown communities by providing shared resources and unique development opportunities. Following this high-profile power play, the future looks promising for other Black entrepreneurs seeking to expand and merge with other companies. We hope our partnership with the Gathering Spot will not only serve as a model for historic deals in the future, but also will provide the platform for more deals for founders of color in the future, says Greenwoods Glover. Continuing to partner with fellow Black and Brown founders with societal and generational impact at the forefront will support the broader goal of continued betterment of our communities. As the Gathering Spot and Greenwood, we can't wait to see what the future holds. The next article is titled, Cracking the Friendship Code: Why Putting Yourself Out There to Meet New People Can Be Good for Your Overall Health. For Black women, friendship and sisterhood are sacred, with an unspoken language of shared experiences. However, it can get complicated. Life happens, like the arrival of an unprecedented global pandemic in COVID-19. Nowadays, our friendship dynamic may look and feel a little bit different, and the idea of making new friends can be daunting. But Marissa G. Franco, PhD, believes we can develop healthy bonds in every phase of living, no matter what is happening around us. It just might require some effort. We take this template from childhood of friendships happening organically, and we bring it into adulthood, only to discover that it doesn't always work out that way, says Franco, a psychologist and professor at the University of Maryland. As the author of Platonic, How the Science of Attachment Can Help You Make and Keep Friends, due in bookstores September 6, Franco offers suggestions for making connections with step-by-step guidelines on how to be a better pal. Her work asserts that friend love is just as important as any other type of love, despite societal norms reflecting otherwise. To have a well-balanced social life, she says, we must allow ourselves to be vulnerable. But a 2020 Psychology of Women quarterly study suggests the strong Black woman schema can be a barrier. It's difficult to be truly authentic when you feel the pressure to be seen as strong, Franco says. Inauthenticity makes us lonely. We have to let ourselves be who we are. Many of us are trying. Technology, specifically social media, can be a useful start point in building bridges. It certainly has been helpful for Ohio resident Deborah Ian, who witnessed her friendships drift over the past few years due to the pandemic. Between being a caregiver to her mother and raising two young children, the 51-year-old stay-at-home mom says this period in time has been surprisingly isolating. I lead a busy life, and it's just hard to make contact with other people, she admits. She says Facebook groups are one way she has maintained a diverse circle online and off. Social media can also help us to network with like minds in a new town. Alaysia Jade, 29, found her sister friends during lockdown after announcing on social media that she was relocating from Toronto to Vancouver for a job. A self-professed introvert, she forced herself to proactively schedule in-person meetups with online connections, which led her to fostering the tribe she needed. The meetups were the result of side introductions from other people, says marketing professional and meditation facilitator teacher. From there, I was able to create a core group. Jade notes that constantly making plans and refusing to be discouraged when people didn't get back to her were essential in process. The lesson? Orchestrate ways you can convert online contacts into real life friendships. This process helps us develop our social infrastructure, Franco stresses. Ultimately, building and maintaining a solid circle of people, however you choose, creates an environment for healing, especially following trauma. This was the idea that inspired Platonic. After Franco realized the power of friends in her own life when she found herself reeling from personal losses. After the last 3 years, loss is something we know all too well. I hope anyone who reads the book will see friendship as a commitment and a responsibility and a joy and a healing force, says Franco. Friendship could be so much more than our culture imagines it, she continues, just deeper, more profound, healthier, and more fulfilling types of relationships. That's why I hope people will go out and make friends, because every time you make a friend, someone else does too. The next article is titled Code Breaking 101. Marissa G. Franco, PhD, breaks down the science of building and nurturing community. Number one, assume everyone wants to meet you. We get older and have this false assumption that everybody has friends already, Franco says. In fact, now is a perfect time to make new connections following COVID-19 lockdowns. So don't be afraid to introduce yourself. People are less likely to reject us than we think. Secondly, make friends through your routine. Look, everyone's busy. Franco says that's why it works to incorporate friendship bonding into your regular schedule. Ask yourself, what is something I need to do and I can do it with community? Want to go get healthy? Join a run club or a workout class. Growing your business? Find a creative entrepreneur community. New mom? Book play dates with a mom whose parenting style you admire. Thirdly, don't avoid conflict. Every relationship has ups and downs, and friendships are no different. Franco believes anger or hurt can be an opportunity to forge a deeper connection, but it's all about your approach. The way you bring up conflict can be an act of love, she says. It takes sharing your experiences rather than telling the other person about themselves. Fourthly and lastly, diversify your social circle. Many uncomfortable cross-cultural conversations are taking place in the wake of racial reckoning of 2020. These shouldn't be a barrier to making friends and having varied backgrounds. We need to interact with different people and feel comfortable bringing our full self to the friendship, even if the other person doesn't share our identity, Franco says. Be open, but also have boundaries. The next article is titled Million Dollar Club. Black women founders share tales of securing $1 million in funding for their businesses. What I do feel is happening to our benefit is that you're seeing more black women raise that Series A and Series B than you've seen before. Raising $1 million as a business owner is remarkable. For black women, it has long been nearly impossible. According to Fortune, just 34 black female founders were able to pull in $1 million in venture capital for their businesses in 2018. In 2020, that number nearly tripled, with 93 black women stating they had secured $1 million in investor backing for their business. Even so, Project Deanne, which tracks the experiences of black and Latinx women founders, reported that this demographic received just 0.64% of total venture capital dollars between 2018 and 2019, topping out at $3.1 billion, with 0.27% going to Black women and 0.37% to women identifying as Latinx. This paints a poor picture when measured against the already small 2.7% of VC that was allocated to female-only funding teams just 3 years ago. Ironically, Black women represent the nation's fastest-growing group of entrepreneurs, with 17% either running or in the early stages of launching new companies, compared with 10% of white women and 15% of white men. However, due to social justice outcry that prompted powerful venture capitalists to pay attention to diversity, equity, and inclusion DEI initiatives, the investment tide is turning. Savitri Wilson is evidence of this. The Louisiana-bred founder and CEO of the tech startup Resilia not only reached the $1 million investment mark, but became the first Black woman in Louisiana to raise more than $2 million. The impressive feat came on the heels of the launch of her first company, communications firm Solid Ground Innovations. While most would think she'd be exhilarated by her progressive accomplishment, she says they left her exhausted. Fundraising is tiring, Wilson admits. About 5 years ago, when I first started, barely any of us Black women founders were able to raise over $1 million, though she has since raised an additional $8 million in Series A funding. She notes that on average, Black women have been able to raise only $37,000 for their companies. But she acknowledges that while the overall amount of venture capital funding for Blacks is still dismal, there's a glimmer of hope. What I do feel is happening to our benefit is that you're seeing more Black women raise that Series A and Series B than you've seen before, she says. But there's still so much work to be done. Denise Woodard agrees. After the working mom launched her company in 2016, while still employed full-time at her job as the director of national sales for venturing and emerging brands at the Coca-Cola company, she set out to raise funding for a business she believed in, but kept getting turned down. The founder and CEO of the clean snack brand, Partake Foods, was rejected by 86 investors before she secured funding for her company 3 years later. She finally got a yes in June 2019 from Jay-Z when the rapper and mogul's Marcy Venture Partners led a $1 million investment in Partake. I do think there have been some positive developments, but I don't feel like I've seen as many changes in the critical earliest stages of investment, Woodard says. For a business to get to that first $1 million in sales is such a challenging thing. And without friends and family and a network of investors, too often Black women don't have the capital to even get the business off the ground. To her point, there aren't many VC institutions focus on investing in early stage Black businesses, but they do exist. Collab Capital, for instance, closed a $50 million fund to funnel dollars exclusively into Black founded enterprises in order to help counteract the unique fundraising challenges faced by Black businesses by Black business owners as compared to other groups. To further narrow the gap, Wilson asserts that early founders should focus on sharpening their pitch before facing investor prospects. Founders like us need to get to know the game better, Wilson explains. We have to understand what the pitch decks need to look like to interest investors, because otherwise will get wheeled out from the beginning. She also suggests road testing pitches with other founders who can offer feedback, so that by the time you're in front of an investor, you will be extremely prepared. Other founders should be your first pitch, she says. Then you should have a list of ideal investors that you want and pitch from the least ideal to the most ideal. Olamide Olowi, founder and CEO of inclusive skincare brand Topicals, intimately understands the whirlwind process of fundraising for a startup. Topicals e-launched in August 2020 in Nordstrom's and was able to gain $2.6 million from investors that included former Netflix CMO Bozoma St. John and Insecure stars Issa Rae and Yvonne Origi. Although it's important to note the significance of the monetary accomplishment, Olowi reflects that Black women founders in the fundraising phase should also prioritize refining their business pitches and concepts. We have to remember to recalibrate, she says. I think so many people get really stuck on their concept, their ideas, exactly what they want to do. But I think fundraising is a really interesting microcosm of the experience you'll see any other time you're doing anything in business. She likens the progress to one of her favorite quotes from Mike Tyson. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. Fundraising is kind of like your first example of that, she explains. You think you have pressure tested your concept, you have got through this business idea, and you are going to go to market. You know who you are going to bring on the team, and then an investor in 30 minutes can poke a hole through all the assumptions that you had. At that point, recalibration becomes really important because you want to take in constructive information to be better able to position your business. On the other hand, it's also important to know when to stand your ground. You have to know when to do one thing versus the other. She's experienced this scenario firsthand. At just 23 years old, she was the youngest Black woman ever to raise more than $2 million in funding, an incredible feat considering that many potential investors insisted the brand's ethos wouldn't catch on. People told me that Topicals shouldn't exist, says Olowi. They said that chronic skin care with a fun brand experience product didn't work, or it was too juvenile, or showing people with visible skin conditions would scare people away. But obviously we proved them wrong. And so I think there are times when you need to recalibrate and take information that you have been given by investors to help build a stronger, cleaner pitch. And then there are other times when you actually just know that the investor isn't the right one for you. And you need to stand your ground based on what you truly believe. Perhaps the most important takeaway for Black women founders is not to allow rejection from one investor to turn you aside, because for true believers, as Olowi, Wilson, and Woodard have shown, the next $1 million infusion of capital may be just one more pitch away. The next article is titled Black in Brew, with a slew of buzzworthy Black-owned cafes and shops from Leimert Park to Inglewood, the coffee scene in Los Angeles is heating up. There's a coffee movement brewing in South Los Angeles, and Black and brown people are at the core of it. The motivation? community, entrepreneurship, and connection. The purpose? Making coffee black again. Coffee comes from Africa. It's a part of who we are, says Lanisha Williams, South Central native and creator of #BlackInBrew, a social network and platform that spotlights melanated disruptors in the Java space. Over the past several years, Black-owned brick-and-mortar locations have begun to pop up around the country, and they've become quite popular across LA. When I first started out, there were only 4 shops, Williams says. Today, there are close to 20 shops throughout the city that identify as Black-owned. A barista who now calls Long Beach home, she says coffee saved her life. I spent 2015 behind bars, and while I was there, I had an opportunity to think about the legacy I want to leave behind, says Williams. Once she recognized the myriad of lucrative business opportunities that the coffee industry presents, she poured her energy into learning about it and building community. Within days of her release in 2015, she was back in a coffee shop as a barista. In 2020, amid the pandemic, she began what would become #BlackInBrew. With 15 years in the coffee game and almost 4 years running my own business, I couldn't be happier with what I'm doing, she says, of the platform. I found my purpose and I live in it every day. Williams was intentional about starting this space by spotlighting neighborhoods like the ones she grew up in, by shining a light on baristas, roasters, and cafe owners from our communities. We show folks there's another way out of the hood, she says. You don't need to gangbang or rob. Coffee brings a multitude of opportunities. Williams is right. Few people realize that coffee is the second most traded commodity in the world, behind oil, with approximately 500 million cups enjoyed each year. It's also the third most consumed beverage globally after water and tea. And while Uganda, Ethiopia, Ivory Coast, Kenya, and Tanzania are among the top coffee producing countries, well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.